And welcome back. This is module 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Module 7. We'll be talking about the core contracts in Windows 8, tiles and notifications.
Sounds like a good plan.
One more thing. The code is available on xaml.codeplex.com. If you want to follow along with us, it's all there. A lot of good reference code there.
Absolutely.
Absolutely indeed. Okay. All right. Let's go through the agenda of what we'll talk through today.
Well, certainly this session, anyway.
This in the next handful of seconds.
Indeed.
All right. Well, so we'll talk about the search charm and the search contract. We talked about that slightly before, but really go into the details from a developer's point of view and how you implement it. The share charm, the settings charm, and tiles and notifications.
Yep. Sounds good.
All right.
Let's leap in.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Search.
All right. We'll start with search. And so, again, we were talking about the charms on the right are the single point or a common single point of invocation for regular tasks inside the operating system and inside Windows 8 applications. So the first, of course, is the search. You invoke it manually. The user does it. The developer, of course, can also help invoke it as well. Do that through the charm, and you establish it first with a contract. The reason we say it's a contract is because inside the application manifest, we go in and we indicate that this is going to be an application that enables search. You certainly cannot search every single application. You can only search those applications that enable the search contract. A calculator app, for example, doesn't...
Searching would be difficult. It would be interesting to understand how that paradigm would work.
Yeah, that's right. I'm searching for 8. Oh, there it is.
Found it.
Right.
But I bet you could abuse the search contract and put an expression in there that it would evaluate.
Oh, and let that be the input?
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
That's just terrible.
Do not do that.
Don't try this at home, children.
That's a bad idea all the way around. All right. But yes, you could. Abuse was the right word to use.
Indeed.
Okay. So there's a couple ways to invoke search, and I think that's a good way to start. Of course, you can use the search charm. The other would be the search type to search, right? Type to search is really nice. So we are used to it in the start menu. You open up the start menu, and there are all your apps. You can start typing, and it searches all of your apps for you, right? And so where your initial start menu may only show a limited set, as you start searching, you search all of the apps you have installed. The same thing could be true in your application. You show your app hub, or you show a section, let's say. You start to type. As you start to type, the search executes. Now, the search UI stays the same and is nice and consistent. We do that through try set query text. What that allows us to do is take whatever the user is doing. I'm sorry. We do that on show on keyboard input. And that allows the user, no matter what they're typing, for that type to go directly into the search box. You don't have to worry about them then navigating, getting to the charm, open it up, selecting the right thing. No, they just start to type, and they start to see it, and it swipes open so you can see. It's very nice, very clean. It's a neat way of making the search pane feel as if it's a native part of your app, which that's what we want.
Right? Yeah, it's really lowering the impedance between their integration into the system. You know, everything just behaves the same way.
Yeah, and like all the guidelines, these guidelines around search say don't put a search on your canvas unless you need a search under your canvas.
Yeah. If you've got an app that's its sole primary purpose is to facilitate searching of something, then it would make sense that you had that search user interface present on your application.
I mean, should I run the Bing app right now? Not having a search in the Bing, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a blank page with the search charm scrolled in. Doesn't make an awful lot of sense.
It's silly. It's very silly. Another thing, so if you do have it in the canvas like that and you're showing it inside your application, then you can use try set query text. That's where it really works.
That's it.
And that's where on the code behind you detect that they have typed in a string. You push that up into the search dialog for them, basically. So they type it in search. You do both search and put it up in the search bar for them. Yeah. And so that's actually a handy way of keeping everything in sync and kind of reinforcing the metaphor or the usage of the search charm. Pretty nice.
It is.
So find in page, just to talk about it, find in page is slightly different. Find in page would be, you know, you're finding text that might be showing in the current document or whatever.
Yeah. Use Internet Explorer as an example. Mm. You know, you want to search broadly across websites is one thing, but another one is just find a specific piece of text within the document and scroll to it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so, I mean, if you do that, you don't use the search pane because this is a incremental search inside mm-hmm. what you're looking at inside the document that's open. And so completely different. The UI is going to be different. Don't use the search pane for that is the goal. Then we also have some enhancements to make search a better experience, a mm-hmm. richer experience.
It's one of those reverse integrations in reality. It's allowing your application to reach back into the operating system to make that search feel part of your app.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so when they're in search, not only does it enable them to have search, but it also has aspects of it that make it even easier. So one of them is search or query suggestions. Mm-hmm. It allows us to say, oh, based on the couple of strings that you've typed, here are some suggestions for you, right?
Yep.
So
in
this little screenshot, they've typed in Word, and so Wordiment HD and WordPress both came up. That's because we're just saying, we don't know what you're searching for, but maybe it's one of these two.
Yeah. Yeah, and also the clear thing that's going on here is, you know, it's scoped, so you're searching within the store application, so it's bringing up applications that you could install.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
That match those things.
And so in that placement, another thing we could add, not only query suggestions, which if you selected that, would take the string, put it up into the query box, and then click go for you, basically. But we also have result suggestions, and so these are more solid finds. So again, the screenshot's perfect. You know, we found that because you typed Word, it might be Wordiment, might be WordPress, or here's a perfect find. You know, Wordiment starts with Word. We think this may be what you want. This is maybe what you searched for before or something like that. Maybe it's something we want to boil to the top based on relevance or something as well.
Yep.
And so we can say, here's a full fidelity piece. So there's you can see that it has both an icon and a second line that you can put more detail if you want.
That's perfect. Now,
So the difference, a big fundamental difference is tapping on the query suggestion helps make the search execute. Tapping on a result recommendation takes you to that record.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, one of the other things is the limitation in only being able to show 5.
Yeah.
There's an interesting facet to that. It's 5 total elements, and when if you look at the screenshots right now, you see recommendations with a line through it. That counts as one of the elements in this list.
So right, this is showing 4 elements. There's room for one more. You could add another line, you could add another query, or you could add another result suggestion.
But the maximum space you have available is 5.
Yeah, that could get the average developer.
It did
me.
No, pros would never make that mistake.
Never, never. But we would warn others.
We would share. If that had happened to us, we would share.
Exactly. All right, well now sometimes searching in a single box is just not enough. Sometimes being able to search requires 2 boxes, 3 boxes, a date picker, the ability to
filter
even further down.
Yeah.
That would be an advanced search scenario, and it's not wrong, right? If a simple search scenario does not work for your application, fine, right? You just don't implement the search contract, but hopefully it does. Hopefully you can find a way to have a simple search and then also an advanced search where the user can see in the search results whatever it is they have. You give them the ability to filter and be able to pivot and sort.
Yeah.
But that may not be enough. You also need to give them the ability for another screen to have advanced search so they can do date ranges.
In an ideal scenario, you're navigating to advanced search from your search results in your application.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, no problem with that. This certainly does not preclude the existence of advanced search, but it probably does handle 90% of the use cases that include search in their application.
Yeah, because the key thing is how you implement search. You know, you're being passed in a text string, then it's up to you to work out, okay, how do I establish those results and how do I present them?
Yeah.
And so that's key as well is, you know, just don't... It's easy to make the assumption, oh, I'm just going to search the first part of name of whatever element I have. But think about, okay, I have multiple elements. Maybe I want to show a category of results, that these are the people, these are the companies, and these are, you know, you can do a lot more with it.
In fact, I think it's worth saying that Windows 8 does not search your data for you.
That is true.
I think sometimes the assumption goes that direction. Oh, okay, so there's a search charm. I select search. I select my application. It'll search my data. No, Windows 8 has no idea where your CRM database is. It has no idea how to search through your SQL server. You are the one who knows how to do that. All this is a front end that leverages a common UI for the user. You are responsible then, find your data. You're responsible for showing your data. Your search results page and my search results page, Darren, may not look the same because we're not interacting with the same data. So it's really up to you, the developer, you, the designer, to decide what it looks like, what it should look like. and go from there. Certainly there are some commonalities between search results, but depending on the application, it may be completely unique.
Yep. And really this comes back to really viewing your application as an extension of the experience of Windows 8. So there are these lots of these capabilities. We've touched on a lot of it today. It's quite clear, I think, to anybody who's really thinking about building an application that there are a number of scenarios you really need to consider when you're designing your app. That it's not something that you're going to throw together in 10 minutes and say, hey, this is my app, this is my idea, these are all the features and so on and so forth I'm going to have. You need to think about all these other touch points that can really integrate it into this ecosystem so it becomes a great and compelling experience.
Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, so let's talk about implementing the search contract. So the first step for implementing a search contract is declaring inside your app manifest that the search, that you're adding the declaration of search, right? And so you can see in the screenshot there on the right, sort of nestled behind the dialog, I've opened up my app manifest, gone to the declarations tab, and selected search. From that point, and you click add as well. And from that point forward, you have search enabled. It's that easy. You don't do this, and it's not going to work.
It no worky.
Yeah, there's definitely code still left to do. The next
just
thing
one or two lines.
Right, exactly. The next thing you can do is go to add new items and select search contract from the add new item dialog. Right. If you do that, that gives you a template for a search result page. I think it's worth saying you do not have to add the search contract this way.
Nope.
This is just a template for you to run with. You may add a blank page and just start from scratch. That may actually be better depending on what your scenario is.
It depends on whether you really you need to be inspired by an existing implementation to give you some guidelines and reference on what you're going to do. And it may even be worth just adding it just to get that baseline template, even if you're going to start from scratch. You can easily remove it thereafter. It's not something that's forced to stay in your application.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so once you have the page that's going to act as your search result, then you can go into AppXAML CS, and that's where you start registering for the activation. Remember earlier we were talking about different activation types. This is certainly a type of activation. On search activated is the method that you want to override inside your application, inside your AppXAML. And from there, you can see the highlighted section below. All you are really doing is navigating directly to your search page. So your application gets activated because of search. Immediately, you want to take the user to the search page, right? That's all that this is about. And make sure they go to the right place. You don't want them to activate your application and end up, I don't know, at the app hub, right?
Yeah, that would just and remember, your application could already be running. You know, when this occurs, that we're activating it, we're bringing it to the front, which is why it's detecting to see whether there's a root frame. You know, it's going to use the existing one if necessary, then it's going to navigate out. And if it's already there, then your search page gets added to the navigation stack. So once you've finished with the search, you could just hit back and you're back to where you were.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Which is key.
There are a couple things you need to consider, not you, but you should too. There are a couple things that you have to consider when you're implementing search. And one of them, if your application is starting for one of the first times, right, it's launching, and search is what causes it, most search results have a back button. They're going back to something. And where does that back button go? You might be tempted, well, we'll just get rid of the back button. Well, that doesn't make sense either, because now where are the users going to go if they don't find the results they want and they want to use the application to do the navigation through your data? So you need to have that in your mind. For if there is nothing in the back stack, the back button of your search results will go to your hub. There's really nowhere else to go. The hub is the start page anyway, and that's where the user can go back to. Of course, if it was activated and not launched, then they would go back to whatever the least recent one was. Very important also, and I think this is a very comfortable thing for users, is if I search twice, one I search for dog and then I search for cat, it's nice when the back button takes me from cat back to dog, right? I want to be able to navigate through that as well. And again, it kind of depends on your data and your application. Maybe that's not the right workflow. Odds are it is. Odds are it's the expectation of the user. I know that when I go and do an internet search, and I search and I get the results, search again, get the results, I like when I go back to see my previous results.
Yeah. You really just have to consider the use cases. If somebody's going to keep staying there and searching many, many different terms, then when they hit back, and they've got to go back 20 times to get back to their page, that may not make as much sense. So really understand your app, understand the usage.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it could get too long as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that is what we do to AppXAML. Then we go into the actual search page itself and how it handles it. So, excuse me. So the first part is to when search suggestions, right? So now we have two different methods that we have that we need to attach to. I went too far? Or I out of view? Out of range? I didn't have that slide. There's a missing little piece here.
Which one? Well, the one we're showing?
On no, board? No. It's a, yeah. Let's see.
Breathe.
Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, so when I wanted the name of the event. Right, that's all I mean. It doesn't show the name of the event. I wish it did. It's search suggestions requested, I think,
yes,
is what it is. And basically, the user is typing in, and you can see on the right there that the user is starting to type blue. And as they type blue, BLU, now they start finding things that match BLU, right? As soon as they start typing that, that's when you start doing searches. And this allows you to provide back those suggestions. And so there's two sections. I can both provide the search or the query suggestions as well as the result selection suggestions. In this case, they're trying to find a color. You can see the three names as well as the full colors that might match as well. That's pretty handy. It's a simple implementation, and it really kind of begs the question of if it is expensive to query your data and define these suggestions, how frequently should I look for query suggestions? Because, you know, you're typing blue, BLUE. The event is raised for BLU and E, right? BLUE. Yep. And I might be a very quick typer. And boom, there's BLUE. That could register as four queries onto my back-end system. Each query takes 10 seconds, let's just say. There's a 40-second delay. That's not what I want.
No.
So you're going to need to decide what the threshold is, both around the size of the string that's being passed in as well as the delay in the user's typing. If I were building the application, and if I were trying to handle that, the easiest, the most straightforward way, and what I would actually say is the best way to do it, is using
reactive extensions.
Thank you. It's using reactive extensions, exactly.
Yes.
When reactive extensions are basically a way of listening to and handling streams of events as mm-hmm. they come to your code. And so as all these events are occurring, how close are they? How far apart? What's the total count? What's the data inside them? Rather than the complex way of doing it by hand, right? Reactive
yeah.
extensions are a powerful way of
They've
handling
They've got a great way of
streams.
Implementing throttling, so you can turn around and say, you know, I'm only interested in an event once a second. I'm only interested in an event that contains X number of much of information.
Yeah, it doesn't solve the problem that your application may take 10 seconds to do the query. The reality is, if it takes 10 seconds to do the query, then that maybe query suggestions are not for you.
Yeah. Yeah,
because that's really burdening your system for, they may never even hit search.
Or they may never even view your suggestions.
Right, because it doesn't come fast
enough. Exactly.
Yeah, great point. That's a great point. All right, so this is the code to actually add the suggestions. When I add query suggestions, it's just an IEnumerable of string. And when I add the results, I add them individually, and they're at the bottom. I add both the name, which is a string, I add another string, which is that secondary line. So in this case, it's the hex value of the color. And then I add some sort of token, that item.name, it's the third one. Some sort of token that indicates a tag that I can recognize it when they do click it. And then the thumb is the image, so I can show the image. The image is optional. I can pass null and not have an image. And then string.empty is the image's alt tag, and that's used for accessibility. Mm-hmm. For different types of screen readers. So it's a lot of power. I mean, that's pretty neat, really. I mean, really, it is.
It is.
You can make a search experience feel pretty robust.
Well.
You can wreck your whole application with it, too.
the latest strategy is not to be advised.
Yeah, exactly. Don't do it that way, but of course you can. All right, search query submission is the final, that's the key one, right? Query submitted. And this is how you get to it. Windows.applicationModel.search. Search pane, that is the namespace, and then you can say dot get for current view. That static method returns the search pane that you the user is or will eventually use to search your application. It has then an event called query submitted that query submitted event is where you handle all the filtering. This is a simple one where all I do is filter the name of the name of the color. But you, of course, here would have to make some sort of maybe a web call, maybe a call to data you have in memory, maybe if you're using a local database like SQLite, something like that. You would do your query here, return it in something like I did in Matches, and set the data context of your, or update the view model either way, of your results page, and just go from there. Again, every results page is slightly different. This is not sample code on how to write a results page. That's up to you. It is based on your data.
Sounds good.
Right. All right. Excellent. Excellent. Excellent.
What else do you want to share? Boom, boom.
All right. So, again, two applications can't talk to each other. That's because we protect the user. We protect the environment. And so we allow for the share charm. Remember, we showed that earlier. The share charm is a swipe from the right to the second one from the top. It allows me to raise an event inside the current application. When that event is raised, it generates a payload, takes that payload, and hands it off to Windows 8. From that point forward, it has no idea what's going on. The reality is the user has selected where the target is, and the operating system takes that payload, hands it off to the target application. So I'm able to transfer that payload then from one application to another, leveraging the operating system as the broker to make sure no funny business goes on. And so you as a developer actually have quite a bit of flexibility to make a pretty neat experience for the user, both as the target and as the source. So you can provide a payload. And what's interesting is there are quite a few types. So I'll jump to the next slide just for a second. There are quite a few types of that you can share. You can share just simple text. You can share links, HTML, images, files, and blank, right? So when you see schema, that's my ability to be able to go in and say, I have something, this payload, maybe it's all in binary, maybe it's all in XML, and whatever it is specified by a specific schema that allows the operating system to filter all of the share targets out of the list. So for example, by schema, I might indicate an invoice schema where the billing system is what I want to receive. And so I specify that this is an invoice schema. I'm ready to share it out. As soon as I do, the operating system automatically filters away what can be received there. Then the very last one is probably the coolest of all, the delegate function.
Yeah.
A delegate function allows me, instead of sharing a payload, sharing kind of a string back to my application to ask for the payload. Let's say building that payload costs me 10 seconds in order to build, let's just say, a query out to my service as well as something else, and I assemble it. It could take a lot, and your receiving application may or may not use it. So instead of assembling it and handing it off to the operating system, which could be expensive, you may have hit share by mistake. Instead, I say, okay, oh, you want it? Here is a delegate function. Goes to the receiving target. The target then says, hey, where is it? Invoke. My application then generates the payload and hands it off, again, through the operating system, but in a delayed fashion so that I don't have to if it's not actually
used. So you're not blocking the UI, basically.
And certainly I'm not blocking the UI, absolutely.
Yeah.
Or I'm not running the operation when it's not necessary as well.
Yeah,
yeah, a lot of interestingness there. Go back one to share contract. I did want to talk about report started and report data retrieved. These are properties and methods and fail with display text. Right, these are properties and methods for you to be able to update the share UI even before the user selects your application, right? And so you're about to share, and I'm able to. So it's even the first one. You can email to David, you can email to Charlie, you can post on a wall, all these different ones that say basically are saying, oh, these are quick links that I'm able to put up there to say, these are what you selected last, right? I want to make sure these are quick and easy for you. My application then bubbles to the top because you selected it recently, mm-hmm. and I'm able to add that to the list. It's really a nice way to make it so the user doesn't have to then select your application, then select something inside of it. You've made it even easier. Because if I were to email to David, I would first have to select share with mail, then I would have to select David and say go, right? This is my way of creating a type of deep link, really, but it allows me to pass even more information as the user selects it, right? So it's easier. Also, you can see on the one on the right, the little dot, dot, dot there that indicates that sharing is not yet enabled, right? So the dot, dot, dot says the source or the provider of the payload hasn't yet assembled all of the information. It's going to take just a second. Or it goes the other way. the receiver or the target that's about to receive it hasn't spun up and been able to check the payload yet, right? And then even cooler is I'm able to feed back directly to the user. You can see the one in the middle and say, you know, the payload you're about to share, you just shared. You're repeating this and you don't need to. Or it could go another way. It could be invalid or something like that. Mm-hmm. But you could do some sort of check and communicate with the user without having to go through the entire process. Another way of just adding fidelity to this experience, that is a, you know, a common action that users do between apps. Cool. Okay, so let's pretend you are a share source. If you're a share source, then all that you really have to do, it's easy to be a share source, right? It's a share target that's hard. Being I say hard, but what do I mean?
Relatively speaking.
Yeah, well, compared to share source, for sure.
Yeah.
A shared source, all you have to do is listen for the data requested event. Once the data requested event has been raised, all that you have to do from that point forward is take the event args that are handed to you and populate them. So you can see here where I fetch the data. In this case, I call get data, whatever that is. That's going to be unique to every application. It fills in the data and then sets up, you can see down in share, sets up all the different pieces. In this case, setting it as HTML format, explicitly saying the type of payload it is without having to indicate the schema.
The interesting thing is that obviously this is being fired in your application as it's already showing information. So you may not actually need to go and get the data. You may already have it already populated. And so, you know, there are a couple of different scenarios. So again, as we've sort of stressed throughout, think about the scenarios in which these are going to be used. You know, if you've already populated the data, it doesn't make sense to go and get it again.
That's a great point. I might be looking at an invoice. I say share. I don't need to go get the invoice. Just package up the one I'm looking at.
Exactly.
Yeah. You definitely want to share within the current context anyway. Mm-hmm. Odds are you've described the 99% case anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, that's perfect. And I'll just dial you up just a little bit on that code block there to fail. And it's your ability to say fail with display text. That is when, for whatever reason, the invoice can't be packaged, right? Mm-hmm. Perhaps based on your security credentials, we won't package it. Or based on limited information, for some reason, it didn't work correctly.
Yeah, or you could just be on a screen where you need to specify the invoice that you want to display, but you haven't actually searched and retrieved anything yet. So it doesn't make any sense to display that empty screen.
That's right. You can still listen to the data requested even though nothing is selected and provide this failure to the user so that they know that we do support share. You just need to do a little bit more inside the app.
Yeah, choose something you want to share. Hmm. Dopey.
That's fascinating. I hadn't planned on saying that, but that's actually a really good little takeaway. Okay, then there is the share target, and this works just like the search contract. You can add the share target contract from the new item, but just like the search contract, this is just a template for you to use, and you don't have to use it at all. You can use your own and build from scratch if that's what you want to do. This is nice because there is quite a bit inside it, and it does help you quite a bit. Again, you receive the payload, you handle the payload, you show what you can do with it. It's a special UI. It doesn't take up the full screen. It just mm-hmm. slides over so that you can see that you're still inside the original sharing source, but you can interact with it there and kind of go and close, right? All of the operations are right there inside that small dialog. And usually you don't go back to the main application from that dialog, but again, it depends on your use case.
Depends what you're trying to do.
Yeah. Okay, so now on to the Play-To contract. The Play-To contract is the third charm. How to implement the Play-To contract is easy enough, right? It's definitely one of the cooler things. So I have the ability to share audio, video, and images. As easy as an image tag in XAML, as easy as a media element in XAML, right? Mm-hmm. That's how I show video, that's how I show images and play sound. That's all it is. Any of those can be mapped directly out to Play-To that easily, right? The hard thing is to have a DLNA device on my network.
Exactly.
As long as you've got that, you're in good shape. And
that's beyond the scope of coding your app.
Yes, no doubt about it. Honestly, how many years ago did TVs not have an Ethernet cable or Ethernet plug? And today, how many TVs don't, right? It's funny how these things go in dramatic ways very quickly, and suddenly we just expect them to be that way. The new DLNA standard is coming. I can kind of explain how it goes together. There's if you implement the DLNA specification, it doesn't matter, right? That doesn't qualify you to be a Windows 8 DLNA Play-To target. Now, there is a certification from the DLNA group itself, so you can be DLNA certified. That means you've implemented it according to the specification. That is the first step, but again, does not make you a Play 2 target for Windows 8. And the reason is, if you were, and let's say, you know, not all developers are created equal, Darren. Some do better jobs than others. Yes. And just because you implemented a spec doesn't mean you did a good job. Doesn't mean it's a nice experience for the user.
Yeah.
And so if you are DLNA certified for the specification, great. That means the specification is right, but the user experience may be bad, right? I am sharing to one of those devices from Windows 8. The experience is bad.
Yeah, basically you want to have some sort of guarantee that your experience from Windows 8 is going to be ideal.
That's right, because who gets blamed?
The application you're trying to share it to.
That's right. And why have your application be blamed when the reality is the TV is just coded poorly, right? Mm-hmm. So now we have one additional step. It's the Windows 8 certified Play 2 target, or I don't remember what it's called, but something real similar to that.
Yep.
It's a smaller list that say not only did you do the specification properly, but you also did this extra level to make the user experience excellent, right? An error goes or whatever, an extra dialogue. Mm-hmm. All those things are contained and consistent.
Yep.
And so once you're on that list, and high-end brands, or not even high-end, but just common brands, you know, they're gonna be certified devices, because frankly, with 1.3 billion Windows devices, it's a motivator.
It would be rude not to.
It would be rude and imprudent.
Imprudent,
I'd say.
Yeah, they chose poorly.
That's exactly right. And so these certified devices would include potentially televisions, receivers, speakers, things like that, as well as Windows Media Player.
Yep.
You have it today, a DLNA target that you can run on your computer, and your computer suddenly becomes a DLNA target. That's pretty awesome. As well as Xbox.
Xbox. Who doesn't have an Xbox?
I don't think any. I think everybody does.
Well, Barry. Well, Barry.
This explains a lot.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, so there are a lot of options. And Xbox is actually an interesting one. It probably is very, very common. You could have a TV that is not a DLNA compliant device, but your Xbox is. And now all of a sudden you can do it. It's a cool thing to be able to have your app be able to be looking at a picture, listening to a sound, or whatever it is, and be able to immediately share that out.
If we'd known that this screen was going to be here and was DLNA, we could have probably done something to push to it.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't that have been sweet?
That would have been awesome.
You think it is?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely we could have done that.
Exactly.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Next time on our session, we will be doing that.
It's a nice new TV, by the way. It wasn't here the last session.
Exactly.
They don't like for us to touch it.
No, they don't, no. I don't like it when you touch it because it falls on me, but other than that.
Okay, here is the code for the Play 2 contract. How much does it actually take? Well, first the section here shows the media element. The media element, in this case, is loading from server.com file mp4. Whatever, right? It's just loading it up. And on Navigated 2, we make sure that the source requested is handled.
Handled?
What's the word there? Attached? No.
So you're unsubscribing and then
resubscribing. Yes, is subscribed to and handled there in the source requested method. And then you can see it's one line. It's beautiful how nice it is. You just say to the event args that are passed in, source request.setSource, and you pass in your media element. Really, it is that straightforward. The rest is handled by the operating system.
And I love to see the enterprise-grade exception handling that's there.
Try throw. Why did you have a try catch anyway?
Exactly.
We get paid by the line, man.
I know. Well, you should have been a couple of new lines there.
Oh, yeah, with the throw in there. We'll throw a new one forget it.
Yeah,
we're getting
crazy. I know. Let's just pull.
All right. All right, anyway, that's the Play 2 contract. That's what the devices tab is for. It's an easy implementation for developers, especially if you've got some sort of media inside.
And if they told us, we'd have done something on that screen.
That's right. I blame Danny.
Yeah.
Down to the settings charm. Earlier we had talked about, again, the charms are a single point of invocation for common tasks inside the operating system and your application. The settings charm, definitely one of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have settings, options, preferences, personalization. Of course, it's hard to find in many applications. That's what we're solving.
Breathe, breathe, breathe.
That's what we're solving. I'm breathing like crazy. I breathe in between words.
Uh-huh.
And what's important is that even though the charm is the way to invoke settings, sometimes it's appropriate inside your application to go directly into the settings without going through the charms, right? Mm-hmm. An error occurred because your password is wrong. Where are you going to go? Well, please swipe and then click. And then, No. Yeah. You don't want to do that. You want to take them directly to where they need to go.
Again, user experience. User experience.
That's exactly right. And there is this idea of light dismiss. And I think this is an important thing to say. The flyout used to create a settings dialog is not a control native to XAML.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is. Certainly, it uses the pop-up control, and it has a lot of things around it. And if you're a developer and you're looking for the flyout control, you're not going to find it.
Yeah.
My blog is jerrynixon.com. I have the settings helper, which handles this for you and creates one behind the scenes for a handful of lines that you might do. However, there's also the Callisto library, mm-hmm. Tim Heuer's library, up on GitHub that you can get that handles it as well. It's a nice little wrapper and handles it. It's really nice. Probably better than mine, to be honest. But that's hard to say out loud.
He's crossing his fingers when he says it.
I got to process that for a second. But that is nice because it does sort of sidestep the effort that a developer might have to go through to create the flyout. How is a setting dialog created? It is with the pop-up, with an animation, and then some a light dismiss on it. So light dismiss is a property of a pop-up. Light dismiss basically says show a pop-up, and a pop-up in XAML is not like a pop-up in a browser. It's just a control that shows. And when you tap off of it, light dismiss causes it to be invisible. Right, it's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And you dock it to the right and all that sort of business as well. So light dismiss is the way to get rid of it. You would have a back button, right? This settings doesn't have a back button from SkyDrive. Often it does, and that takes you back to... I'm not in the options yet. This is just the root pane. Yeah, this is the info pane. If I went into options, it would ask me whatever and have a back button that takes me back to the root charm is a neat way to say it, but the info pane, exactly. Okay, so now what goes in settings?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Now, again, this is all around recommendations and certainly a set of guidelines that you want to follow but don't necessarily have to if it doesn't
fit.
It's
subjective.
That's
and
right.
I think the key theme that we've expressed is it's what makes sense for your app.
Right. A setting is something that would change occasionally.
Yeah.
If you want to go settings into... If you're writing a painting application where, you can... finger paint, let's say, Darren.
Yeah, and you want to change
the
colors.
You want to change the color. You put that in the settings pane.
No.
No, absolutely not. Because that's a normal workflow that you change, not occasionally, but regularly.
Yeah.
You want to have that in your command bar or somewhere in your canvas.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. So these are things that you change occasionally and aren't part of your application's workflow.
They could be things like default search filters. Mm-hmm. You may put them in there. They're going to be pretty much stationary. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have it... You're on a search page... and you want to filter by name, or search by name, or order by name, you don't want to have to navigate all the way through settings just to set that.
Right. The commanding inside your application still needs to be in those app bars that we talked about in previous modules. Yeah, absolutely right. It is also important that it might be that users don't ever go into your settings because you as a developer have thought it through and you've done a really great job of defaults.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, the 99% case is taken care of by all the defaults. Thinking through your defaults really can just build a better user experience, but allowing customization is also nice too. They just feel it's more robust.
I mean, if you think about a scenario where maybe you have to authenticate to an external service and you already have a user account on that external service, and so you have a logon UI, you're not going to use the settings pane to present your logon UI. You're going to have an inherent view in your application that does that. However, if you want to edit your logon credentials somewhere down the line, that's where you're going to go to your settings pane.
That's right.
So you're going to cache them, put them in there. So think about those different flows.
That's right. The words that you use, the actual labels in the kind of link button that shows up over there, the guideline is that you try and minimize that as much as possible so that it is sort of a glance-and-go experience. The user can swipe that over, see exactly where to go without having to read your thesis of what they're supposed to link on. So in this case, it's as little as one word where you might have account settings. Just change that to account, right? You're in the settings pane for Pete's sake. All right. And perfect. If you happen to be linking out, which those link buttons can cause you to link out to a website, if that is what you're doing, just put online so the user isn't surprised when they click it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Easy recommendations, really about usability. Okay, so now let's
tiles.
See. Tiles. Back to tiles. Man, I do love tiles. A huge differentiator, right? Mm-hmm. My wife has a Windows phone, just like I do, and a friend of hers has another type of phone. There are others out there, as it turns out.
I don't believe it.
I know. I don't see any, so I'm surprised.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because I live in Redmond. Look at that. Barry?
Mr. Bulmer is actually following this.
Talk to Barry. All right. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Anyway, there really
and
are.
There leaves Barry.
Yeah. I have to learn the new guy's name.
Exactly. Hey, not Barry.
But I would, you know, she has that, and she loves those live tiles as well. She looks at her friend's phone who was just playing and showing her something, and she couldn't figure out why she didn't have live tiles. She really thought everybody had it because it just seems like one of those, just naturally useful things. Mm-hmm. And it's a great differentiator for the Windows Phone, definitely for Windows 8 as well. These live tiles that just bring the information up, create a personal dashboard for you in a lot of ways. So we have large and small tiles, or wide and square tiles, where the large tile. Yeah, or the square tile is certainly the one for tiles that aren't live. We talked about that. If you're not going to put content, they'll take up space. And then you can use square or large for live tiles, whichever is right for you. You can queue up 5 different pieces of content, as well as you can especially see that in the bottom sample. You can add glyphs. And so you can see the little smiley face. You can add a glyph there. Or that little circle with the red dot, that is a glyph you can add. That's the glyph. Actually, the little smiley face is the icon, sorry.
Yeah.
The little glyph there of the circle there, we have 99 different glyphs that you can pick from, as well as just swap that out to be a number if you want to show a number from 1 to 99 as well.
Yeah. So I mean, I think it's key to point out that there are templates that you're leveraging for these presentations. They're baked into the OS and so on, but there are a very large number of them.
Yeah, there are. I think it's a handful of slides down, but there's 40-some that you can pick from. It's not willy-nilly. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not something that you wouldn't want it to be willy-nilly. You want some sort of structure so that when you open up your start menu, it's not totally confusing.
Yeah.
You do have a little bit of flexibility if you can generate images on the fly, if you really need it to be laid out a certain way. But
think
generally,
about using that very, very carefully because, again, you're trying to create this consistent experience with everybody. And if you suddenly invent some new communication paradigm and so on and so forth, it's just going to be jarring. It's not going to integrate with the rest of the experience.
Yeah. And once you have invested into your tile, you're going to want to update it to make it live. There are different ways that you can update it. The first way you can update it is from the app itself. While the app is running, it goes out to your tile, makes sure that it's up to date or pushes fresh content out to it. Then again, you might want to do that from a background task. A background task checks some sort of piece of data, takes that data and updates your tile as well. The tile itself can reach out to a website. You can post an XML block somewhere on the web, and there's a period of time that passes. It goes to make sure that that XML has or hasn't changed and can refresh it as well. You can also push tile updates through push notifications, Windows notification services that we talked about before, that you can take Windows notification services, push that update, and those tiles will reflect those changes as well. Very powerful. There's a lot of ways to change it without your application loading. A lot of ways to make sure that tile is up to date and live and useful. There's just no excuse not to, right?
There's no excuse not to.
Calculator is the only gimme. If that's not up to date.
If that's not up to date.
It would be cool if it cycled through the last the last operations.
No.
No, probably not. Just the totals.
Exactly. Yeah, random numbers being presented. Oh, what's that? Yeah, no, not at all useful.
You know what? That's a good point. There is a useless way to have a live tile, but you can also make your live tile not representative of your app as well. I mean, I've gone into my live tiles sometimes and not known which tile is the tile I really am looking for.
This is one of the interesting things. If you end up using a template that's just full imagery and so on, you don't know what app it is sometimes. You see those really badly designed ones.
I know. You've got to read the title, and you can say not to put the title on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, there's a picture, but which out of these 17 tiles that are showing pictures? So think about that as well. You want to be able to understand what the app is. If you've chosen to hide the label or whatever, put something else that's identifiable on there.
That's right.
So that somebody's just not looking at it going, I'm not sure what that app is.
Okay. That's right. All right, let's look at some code snippets on how you do some of this cool stuff. The first would be the secondary tile. The secondary tile
The first would be the secondary?
The first Yeah, you're right. Let me take that back. The first would be the secondary tile that we're going to look at. The secondary tile is it's actually a sibling of the parent, if you can imagine such a thing. The primary tile is there. That's the main link into your application. Secondary would go to some subsection. In this case, it goes to a details view, and you might go to, I don't know, a specific invoice, let's say.
Well, say for example, you've got an Amazon Kindle app. You know, you've got your library of books that are downloaded. There's a book that you're reading currently. You want to create a secondary tile that goes directly to that novel and opens it at the location you're at.
Yeah, rather than going to the main screen and then navigating through it, uselessly wasting time.
Exactly.
What's even better about that, a secondary tile can have content, live content as well. So now I can see live content on, say, my novel.
Showing you book color, book cover, perhaps percentage read through the book, and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of opportunity to really think about, okay, how do I extend this experience?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, so here's the code. So what you do is you create a new secondary tile. Secondary tile comes from the, what's the namespace for it? Startscreen.secondary tile is where it comes from. And you create it with all the properties that you need. So in this case, it has an ID of its own as well as arguments. So these arguments is how you would recognize them individually. So let's say this was to a book. The ID might be the book ID, so mm-hmm. you can tell which one it was. You knew from the title ID that it was for a book, and then the arguments will tell you which book it is. The short and display name are depending on the size of the tile, and they show the title on it. Certainly you don't want to leave that blank unless it's obvious to the user. Then you can manipulate the colors as well, include a logo that goes behind it. Mm-hmm. And then the tile options. Now I'll point out tile options rather not to show the name. There's no template here. Earlier we were talking about a template, mm-hmm. and the reason there's no template here is because this is the first tile. It's the queued up tiles under it that use the templates, right? So the first tile looks like this. That way there is some consistency around it. And then as we add these queued up ones, which we call notifications, they are using the templates that show all the additional rich content. Anyway, you create the secondary tile and call request create async.
And hand it over to the operating system, and it does its thing.
Yeah, that's right. At that moment, the operating system actually prompts the user and says, do you want to create this secondary tile? And they say yes, hopefully.
Hopefully.
That's right. You can have a large, full, or I guess stretched across the whole screen request, or you can indicate exactly where in your app to make it mm-hmm. more custom.
Yep.
Right? More custom of where that request takes place. Okay, so the next thing we can do is go find all the secondary tiles inside your application. So we do that in the same namespace, secondary tile, dot, and then we can go into a static method that returns find all async, returns a list of all the secondary tiles in your application. And of course, you would tell the different ones based on either the tile ID or the arguments. It's up to you and the tricks that you have done. And so in this case, it finds a tile ID that is the details view and finds a specific argument that was passed into this method. Once you have that, it updates the short name and the display name with whatever else was passed into this method and then updates it. Update doesn't have to be approved because it's already there. We're just making it fresh.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So this method could show up in your application or it could show up in your background task because it has the same references. So now we also have the badge. So remember that's where that glyph was. In this case, I'm going to be updating the number. See where it says 12 right now. And so I do now is I create a specific type of what I'm going to update. This allows me to constrain what I change inside the tile. It's a badge notification, and when I pass that badge notification with whatever number it is, you can see it's just set attribute. Well, let me back up a second.
Yeah.
When I create this type, it's really pulling back an XML document, mm-hmm. right? You were talking about templates. This really is a template.
Yes.
Those templates really are XML documents. So now instead of saying template.property, what I really get back is an XML document. So I have to say XML document dot element dot value, right? Something like that at least. So I can use link to SQL to do it, or I can use that. In fact, you don't use link to SQL, or you could, but
yeah,
I don't. Nope. In this case, it's an XML document where you can say set attribute, and it's the value of the badge XML or tag.
Yeah, and there's some frameworks out there that hide that behind, that you can basically pass the XML document into a class and then just use types.
Yeah, in fact, in a second, we're going to show the the Windows 8 SDK sample. Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth showing for a couple reasons. One, it's a great sample. And the other is...
And two, you didn't have to write it.
Two, I didn't have to write it. Yep. Three, I mean, I would have written the same thing. I would have written it basically exactly. The same way. Probably better, but who's saying?
Yeah, you know. Could you get a wide shot to get his head in?
pull back. And... That's good. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, so now I can interact with the XML direct. Oh, the SDK has that framework that you were talking mm-hmm. about, where I can interact with it as if it's a class, but it's really XML. Anyway, so that's how I interact with it as the XML document, pass it to the notification class. It handles the rest. Presume.
Presume.
All right, so here are some of the... you can just see there. Here are the notifications for the... here are the templates for the notifications. Yeah. Those are the ones we would queue behind a tile. I would need both the templates for square and for wide in order to really handle every use case. So it's worth remembering how you want it to go. You know, definitely don't skew your images if it works so that it's wider. Your app, by the way, doesn't have to have a small tile. Doesn't have to have a wide tile. It could be one or the other or both. It's really mm-hmm. up to you. But here you can see the template really is just an XML block, and you are interacting with the XML directly. So here is how you would create the notifications. All of these, you know what, I'm gonna skip past this one because it's quite a bit there. Again, it's just interaction with the XML where you are setting the values. But what you do is say tile notification dot update, and you pass in that notification. It appends to the queue. If it's the 6th out of 5, it's last in wins, and the first one gets rolled off that way, so you don't yep. have to worry about it. Yeah. Okay, so toast is magically similar to tiles.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's just presented in a different place.
It really is. It's a tile that floats. It's a good way to think about it. It uses the templates, not the same templates, but it uses templates the same way. It's transient, so it goes away. The user can obviously disable the notifications if they want to.
But you can make them sticky.
Yeah,
you can make your toast sticky.
What?
So then you'd be dismissed.
What?
Carry on.
How do you do that?
Set a sticky property.
Oh my gosh, and you have to click the X?
Uh-huh.
Brilliant. And I tell you what, you learn something every day.
Yeah,
I'm fast ball. I am so glad you're here.
He doesn't mean that, viewers.
What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. So just like a tile can be updated from many different places, a toast can be rendered from many different places, including the app background tasks and push notifications as well. So, a bad storm is coming. You can cause Toast notification to pop up, and it can be a deep link into your application. Right, it's very nice, easily implemented. In fact, the only thing I want to get out of this slide, right, is not because we've said everything already, is there on the right where you go into the application manifest and you set the ability to... You enable Toast through Toast capable yes, right? Mm-hmm. Don't do that, it's not going to work.
Yep. The other interesting thing on here is you can attach sound, and you can make sound looping, so it's really, really annoying.
Yeah, so you might have an alert that's an alarm, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And which is where you might use a sticky one as well, right?
Yep.
So you can go directly into your appointments. And having a one-time sound might be neat. You know, I just got a text message, boo. Right.
Yeah.
But you may have an alarm, and it's important that you go into your appointment or whatever, and it continues to loop. Now, you can't pick any sound.
Nope.
You pick from a list of sounds that the operating system provides, and those can be set by the user.
Mm-hmm.
But you pick from that list nonetheless.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Not just any sound.
Yeah. No fart apps on there.
The user can make the whole operating system a fart app. One giant multi-billion-dollar fart app. All right, so we also have Toast notifications there that use the same template. Here's how you show it. Just look at the last line, notifier.show. You pass in the template, and it goes, right? Immediately shows. Doesn't have to immediately show. I could also schedule it for a certain time. That's when it shows.
Yeah.
Pretty nice.
Awesome.
Yeah. Was it?
I think so.
Great. All right, so let me pull up the SDK, just show a couple things. I know we're right on time here, so I will...
Right on time, which is code for oops.
No! Yeah, but it's still worth showing. Let me show just the toast, because the toast is the fun one.
Yeah.
So if you have downloaded our apps, they are, if you look in... Where did we put the SDK ones? Oh, right here in the SDK
one called
samples.
SDK?
Yeah, I get it.
It's magic.
I am so glad you're here. Did I already say that?
Uh-huh.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Awesome.
Great. Notification extensions could not be... Great. That is great.
Oh, did you not install something?
Well, there's nothing to install. Mm-hmm. Great. Great. All right. No, we're not... I haven't given up yet. Are you kidding me? App tiles, badges, app notification, sample. Shazam. Shazam. Don't forget, you can download the SDK from MSDN. Don't rely on us to do it.
Exactly.
Good gravy.
Clearly, we're not that good.
Clearly. Oh, I deleted it from this as well. All right, forget the whole thing. I'm not going to show the sample, but don't take this wrong.
Let's
you
see
can,
if I can
easily
run it.
Download it yourself.
No,
yeah, let's
you completely
try it.
Broke it.
Looks like
Where's
you broke
the bus?
It. Looks
yeah.
like you broke it.
Uh-huh.
Great job, Darren.
Yeah.
Freaking
well.
Barry.
Exactly.
So it's going great until. All right. Let's do a quick recap. We don't have to show a toast. We know what a toast is.
Yeah. It's unfortunate we can't show the SDK, but it's down there. It shows you every possible scenario you could leverage for both tiles, toasts, notifications. It's great.
It's why the SDK really is cool, because it shows every possible thing. And
yeah.
It may not be the way you implement it in the end, because it's pretty complicated the way they do it, in my
yeah.
opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Your scenario probably only uses one or two templates, so you don't have to have the entire, you know...
Plethora implemented.
Yeah, exactly.
But be inspired by... It's good.
So, as far as contracts, there's the search contract and the way that you can interact with the search contract to make it even more valuable to the user. And, of course, the way that you leverage inside your application for advanced search and the results that you show. As well as the share charm and the way, that, again, you can interact with the operating system to make the share experience have a higher fidelity so that you can handle things that may take a long time. And then the settings charm as well, the settings charm for that commonality of user interface, as well as the reality that you might need to jump into that. Mm-hmm. We talked just a bit about Callisto and my own website that has the helper to build it out, or you might want to just build it from scratch. Go for it, but don't look for the flyout control because it's not there.
There's a lot of other helpers on your website as well with file interactions.
There really are. There's
so
a lot of little pieces like this where I can take several lines and bring it down to just a few. And but yeah, there's a lot of resources on my blog. I'm glad you brought that up because it's true. And then we have tiles, both primary and secondary tiles, that can use those templates, that can deep link into your application, that can be really, really, really valuable, as well as queuing them up. And the same implication with Toast, that you can push even from the internet itself to draw users into your application. Very nice.
Yep.
Very
great.
Nice.
Good job. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and we'll be back with the final deck.
With the grand finale. See you in 10
See
minutes.
You later.